When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Niall or Nine podcast. It is myself, Niall, and Andrea Cleary. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Niall.
How are we?
We're good. We're recording this on a miserable Thursday morning.
Miserable Thursday morning.
It's, yes.
It's dark and bleak, much like the topic we're going to discuss here today.
Yes. There's no hope.
Yeah. No, I think... I wrote something earlier this week on the website about a thing that's been going on with regards to merch and touring. And I thought it'd be nice to just shine a light a bit more on that situation and what's going on. And maybe, you know, it's not just artists who this affect, it's fans as well, because, you know, we're talking about essentially selling merchandise at venues and festivals, and the increasingly common practice in the last 4 or 5 years of venues flat charging 25% commission, or, well, around 25% commission. 25 seems to be the kind of standard on the merch sales that any artist support or headline sells at a venue. So there's a number of things I want to get into about this, because it's I think it's interesting, and it's one that, you know, people who, like us, who go to a lot of live gigs should be aware of, and also aware of, like, the intricacies of it. Basically, back in January, the Featured Artists Coalition in the UK announced a new directory highlighting venues that charge zero commission on the sale of merch. And just recently, it revealed that 400 live music venues had signed up to that charter, essentially saying that they don't take a cut of the merchandise. So if you go to a venue like Whelan's in Dublin or Cypress Avenue in Cork, I know there's two examples of venues who do not take a cut of merchandise for the artist. So if you're looking at essentially what's been happening now is that, as we've discussed here and there, a lot of acts who are touring again post-COVID have been hit with a number of issues. There's inflation, cost of living, Brexit, COVID being an issue, like getting it and not being able to tour, cancellation dates, travel, transport, all of those costs have essentially gone up. And the only thing that hasn't gone up is really the fees. And if anything, sometimes they've actually gone down. So when an artist decides they want to go on a tour, especially now we're talking small to medium artists, because, like, I was in the Three Arena recently, as we discussed, for Kendrick Lamar. And Kendrick Lamar was selling a lot of merchandise for like 35, 40 quid, maybe a hoodie for like 80, I think it was. Now, those are the prices you expect when you have a big artist, a big, big artist who comes into an arena. Now, the logistics of selling that merchandise involves probably a company specifically who come in on the day, which I know people who have worked for them before, who come in and basically sell the merchandise on behalf of the artist. The artist ships the merch to and from the venues and looks after that part, and is handled by the merch partner in the local area and in that venue. And I'm not 100% sure how that what the percentage is or how that works, or if it's a flat fee or whatever, but I think it is probably a percentage. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
But that's, so that's those
fair
are kind
enough
of the,
because there's labor going into that. So that's like, yeah, those people need to get paid. Absolutely.
So, yeah. And in some venues, like I think the Olympia do it, where they will have a person or a couple of people who will sell your merch for you, but they will charge you a commission as well. So that's an example of what we're talking about here.
Do you have the option in a place like the Olympia to?
It's not, you can't have the option.
Of your
you
own?
Have to use the same person. You have to use their suppliers or their staff, essentially. Which means that that is one of the reasons why recently, say, Peter Hook was playing the Olympia, who was a very big proponent of this directory as well, and been very supportive of it, saying the worst venue, the worst example of this is a venue who charges 25%. And does nothing for it. And that is the crux of what we're talking about here. The main thing. It can be very difficult. I mean, once you get to a bigger venue, you get a set of rules of how it works. Sometimes you're not told till you get there on the day. Obviously they charge VAT on sales as well. So that's what you're talking about here is eating into the artist's income, because merch is one of the big drivers of how artists can make money these days. Here's an example actually from Kieran Smith on Instagram, who responded to my Instagram post this week. A lot of venues, once you get to a particular size, will set the rules for selling the merch in the venue. A venue will say, if you want to sell merch in this building, it must be sold by either the venue directly or an agency. That way they know how much has been sold and will take their cut. They have to charge VAT on sales, so they charge a fee, say 25% of the income, but also charge VAT. Many small arts won't reach threshold for paying VAT, so they are already adding it on. A t-shirt sold for 30 quid, for example, is split VAT 561, commission 25%, 610. So artists will get 18.29 of the 30 euro sale. Any cost they have to come from that, let's say a t-shirt costs 8 quid, band makes 10 quid per sale. So on a 30 quid t-shirt. The average support would be lucky to sell a handful of tees, but they already get a tiny fee for the gig. So they need every penny they can get to try and come close to break even on costs. And they can forget about trying to pay themselves. So later on the show, we're going to talk to Cadence Weapon, who is one of the main people spearheading the Canadian and North American branch of this directory. It's called My Merch, and he's asking venues to sign up their to this charter, saying that they don't take commission on merchandise. And it's become, maybe it was a thing that was glossed over previously because there was money in the industry.
I honestly, until this was mentioned, I'd say about maybe 8 or 9 months ago on Twitter, somebody in a tweet, and the tweet wasn't huge or anything, it was just somebody who I follow with like a few hundred followers, said something like, oh yeah, but I wish people knew that venues take like 25% of the merch sales. And I was like, what? They do? I always assumed that all of the money that I was giving to buy a t-shirt or a tote bag or a tea towel, whatever it is I'm buying, that it was going directly to the artist, because that's the point of merch. That's why merch exists, so that you can support the artist. And like, look, with something like, you know, I don't like venues who are like, oh, you have to use our person to sell the merch, but I also appreciate that there is labor coming from that person, and that person needs to get paid. But that person, the actual person who's putting in the labor of selling those t-shirts, they're not getting the 25% that the venue is getting. Like the venue aren't saying, oh, that's passing straight over into your hands. They're just getting paid a wage. So like it just doesn't really compute for me. It doesn't, you know, like if this is the case, then should the band get a percentage of the sales from the bar, since we're all,
I mean,
in
that's
it together,
the argument, right, you know? Isn't it, like, well, you're absolutely selling your thing, so we're selling a drink on you. So I mean, that's kind of like tit for tat, but like I have to ask though, have you ever bought a tea towel at a merch stand? I need to know.
No, I nearly bought a tea towel. It was a Sorka Richardson was selling a lovely tea towel. And I didn't buy it because I live with a man and I don't think he wouldn't understand.
He doesn't appreciate tea towels?
Well, no, he already doesn't understand that there's a difference between the nice tea towels and the tea towels that we use for tea toweling. So I was like, no, that's too risky. So I bought a tote bag instead.
Okay, you just need to get him some help. It's all right.
Yeah. But you know, like you've got the nice tea towels that hang on the on the oven door.
Listen.
And you don't use them.
Yeah.
But he does.
Generally not as absorbent as those ones either, are they?
No. So yeah, I could just envision him mopping up some pasta sauce that he'd spilled with my Sorka Richardson tea towel and I'd be very upset. So went for the tote bag.
What is the best bit of merch you've ever bought at a merch stand?
I don't know. I've never bought anything very strange. I do tend to just go with t-shirts and tote bags.
I bought some ABBA socks at the ABBA
Voyage. Oh, nice.
Thing. A set
That's
of four.
Good.
I'm wearing them all the time.
Is there like one ABBA on each sock?
No, there's just different colors.
Swap them?
Just different colors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just different bright colors. That's all.
One I would love to see more sale of like mugs. I really feel like mugs would be something that I would enjoy buying because I like mugs.
Well, we did actually
buy a good quality mug.
Lumo had a field trip to see Phil Collins and we all bought mugs and then promptly left them in a venue we were DJing in the week later and never got them back.
Oh no. Yeah, I suppose if you're selling mugs at a venue, you'd have to only sell them after the show.
Yeah.
Because you can't be giving people mugs and then sending them into a venue. That's fair enough.
Into the mosh. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or just like little, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. No strange merch. Just t-shirts.
You've
got a really nice Pavement t-shirt recently.
Oh, good. So yeah, so back to this Featured Artist Coalition directory. So one of the reasons that it came up really is because obviously since things have come back, it's been very difficult for artists and even like I've noticed, you know, anecdotally, being offered fees to DJ for less than what I would have been getting before. And like after 2 years of doing nothing, you're like, well, is it worth my while doing this? It doesn't really seem to be. And I'm sure artists are doing the same, especially when a support act. If you're a support act, you typically get 100 quid if you're lucky. In the UK, sometimes it's 50 quid. So,
and
like,
is that
you
split between
really
the band?
Cover your costs.
100 quid for the whole band?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like it's for everything. So you're not making any money. I think the idea is like, you know, we can do this because there's loads of other people that would do it otherwise. Mm. But also, you know, you're doing this because you want to be on this bill.
Yeah, but that's getting into working for exposure territory, which we don't like.
Oh yeah, no, it is with all but name, with all but name. And, you know, so later on we'll talk to Rowley Pemberton, aka Cadence Weapon, the Canadian rapper, and about his recent tour. He's been sharing a lot of really interesting thoughts on his Substack of late, and probably the last year and a half or so. And one of those things that you talked about recently was just kind of how difficult it was to tour at the moment. We do talk about it a bit as well, so I'll share a bit more later about the specifics about what he's talking about. But first of all, just to talk about what is actually happening with this merch thing is I'm seeing it a lot more and more and more. So, and it's a lot to do with the young and up and coming small to medium sized independent artists. But here's the thing, right? So I remember we talked about dry cleaning earlier this year or the year before, setting up a pop-up shop outside near the venue they were playing in because they didn't want to pay this merchandise commission, which is absolutely fair. So we've now seen in the last couple of weeks even, other acts doing that recently. The Big Moon recently did it in Kentish Town Forum where they were playing up near there. They will not be selling merch at their, this was in September. They instead hosted a pop-up store nearby the venue they were playing in, which is the O2 Kentish Town Forum. So a lot of these venues are owned by the bigger promoters and they have set those rules. And the Big Moon said the Kentish Town Forum, like many other O2 venues, take 25% plus VAT on every sale we make. It's basically all of our profit on the merch. These are a choice of either not making any profit or increasing prices and charging you guys more. Neither feels fair. Now, I guess when you come to the arena shows, something like the Kendrick Lamar prices, that's where that gulf comes from. That's where that extra, you're like, oh, things are way more expensive here. It's not just because it's in a bigger venue. It's because people are charging more along the line and the artist is passing that along to you. So you have to ask, is that fair enough that you are being charged?
I'm sure
that
Kendrick Lamar's label have profit as their bottom line more than like an indie band who Kendrick Lamar's label want to make a profit on, like a decent profit on stuff that they know people are going to buy.
Well, I presume it wouldn't be his label. It would be his own, like, unless I don't think he signed a 360 deal. Otherwise, that's when the label would be taking the money. At the moment, it would probably be just going directly.
And just explain to the listeners what a 360 deal is, because I didn't know it until about 5 minutes ago when you told me.
Right. Yeah. So later on, we'll talk to Rowley Cadence Weapon about a 360 deal. That is when an artist signs a deal with a label who essentially take a part of a percentage of every bit of income that they make. That includes live performances, publishing, syncs, merch sales, endorsements, and any other entertainment income. So not just the recording, a decent deal these days. A label would either give me some money up front to pay for the recording and the promotion of a record in return for 50% of the master recording. Every song that's out there is made up of half master and half publishing. Publishing is where the songwriter owns what they wrote, the actual...
The Taylor Swift issue, that's why Taylor Swift was able to re-record her music.
So that's why Taylor Swift is re-recording all her music, because she no longer owns the masters for those recordings. And in order to devalue what's going on with the original recordings that she recorded that she no longer owns, she's recorded new versions.
Because she owns the publishing rights. Yeah.
Yeah, because she owns the publishing. She can do whatever she wants with that. But in a 360 deal, and certainly the worst ones, they would actually take a percentage of your publishing
scumbags.
Deal as well.
Sorry.
Yeah. So later on, I mean, that's why it started around after Napster, around the Napster time, when people were like, when all of a sudden the racketeer industry that was the CD and profit-making world of CDs and physical sales were suddenly dwindling, and people were like, we need to do something about it. And so it was basically reaching into the artist's pockets and taking more of a percent from those artists directly. So this is about 12 years ago now. Rowley does talk about this, but he didn't talk about the specifics of it really. There's a great piece on his Substack, cadenceweapon.substack.com. So he said he signed a 360 deal and he learned the hard way when he was younger. I signed a management contract with this label as well, where they received 20% as well. So this is a 360. They did everything. I signed a publishing contract where they received 50% of my publishing revenue forever. They currently still get money from my first three albums quarterly. I signed a record contract where they own the masters and I'd only start seeing income when I recoup the expenses for the albums. So essentially, the label never counted me once over the first 12 years of my career, so I never had any idea when things would balance out and start to see some money. This hypothetical debt became an albatross around my neck. By my count, I had sent them 250 grand over the years, and they'd gotten grants on top of that.
Jesus.
My ex-girlfriend connected me to a music lawyer she knew, who linked me with a litigation lawyer who helped me move on from the contracts. This whole situation is why I didn't release an album for 6 years. So yeah, he talks about having to build up his career again, which he's successfully done. Last year, he won the Polaris Music Prize in Canada, the Canadian album of the year for his album Parallel World. So obviously, things were going pretty well. After that, he's been able to build himself up again. But I just think, you know, he has some advice laying around for people who might be facing that kind of deal. But it is really terrible, a terrible situation to be in. But, you know, I mean, this merch issue is one part of that, because it's basically exploitation. And exploitation is a word that's used a lot in publishing and sync in this like real granular fashion. It's like it's a technical term almost, but I mean, we're talking about traditional exploitation of an artist here, and that's what this merch stuff seems
and
it
passes on as well
artists.
Too, I mean, if you're an artist who isn't gonna be making any money or very, very little profit on your merch, then it's more likely for you to improve that bottom line to go to places with cheap labor to make your merch as well. So it passes on to that as well. Like a lot of Irish artists I've seen are committed to sustainable merch and, you know, like good quality, like recycled stuff, or making sure that the people who make the clothes,
like this great quality Other Voices,
beautiful, you know, like Other Voices are fantastic for that. But if you're trying to, you know, cut and any and all costs that you can, going for cheap labor or what is essentially slave labor when it comes to the people who are actually making your merch is something that artists will be kind of forced into making the decision to do. So it's an even broader issue than just, you know, the labor of the artists and the labor of you know, what goes into actually getting the merch there and the labor of selling the merch as well. It's just, it's like anything, you know, if you've got exploitation in one part of the production line, then it's going to spread out and poison the rest of it as well. So that's also something, you know, to consider, that if you're buying merch from an artist who is committed to, you know, having good values in terms of who's making that merch, then it's very likely that they're not making as much of a profit as somebody else who doesn't care, you know? So support those artists, support those festivals.
Yeah. And I mean, like I mentioned, acts are finding it hard to stay on the road, which is how Yard Act put it recently. They run a pop-up shop in Leeds at the O2 Academy because they take cuts of merch as well. And they said, we want to highlight the issue that certain venues are taking big cuts of income that is pretty necessary to keep arts on the road. Items will be approximately 25% cheaper than at the venue due to the Academy taking 25% cut of all merch sold. So fair play to them for doing that. And so that's one of the things. But the other thing there is, like, I haven't seen mentioned, is that vinyl pressing has had such a backlog because of actually people like Taylor Swift who were printing huge amounts of records. Therefore, affecting
four of them, four different kinds. Don't get me started on Taylor Swift's vinyl grab this year.
Yeah, but it does have a real world effect on every other artist, because
it was the same with Adele.
I went to see Mary Wallopers last week. They're brilliant. It was in the National Stadium. I wanted to buy a record. Their records weren't there going to be ready till January, presumably because there's such a backlog on pressing plans, meaning that they lose out on merch on that night where they could have sold a couple of hundred records, even, maybe, you know what I mean? So like their big Dublin headline show, they could have sold more, a lot more than they had. I bought a t-shirt in the end. But it's really just that kind of knock-on effect of what happens when big business gets into every pocket of an artist and starts to take bits and bits, and then the knock-on effect of, oh well, Taylor Swift wants four different versions of this new album, we'll prioritize that because we know people are going to buy it, therefore knocking somebody else out who wants to print up something and has to wait another 4 months
and then there's,
in order to do it. And
there's an over reliance for record shops on selling those LPs from Taylor Swift as well.
Yeah, and it's got so big now that even Jack Antonoff himself was talking about this merch stuff last week. You know, I mean,
he produced Taylor Swift's records. Like,
I know. So it's mad. So, I mean, I don't know if he's quite seen the duality there, but he said he's urged venues to stop taxing, and by top taxing, he's taking merch cuts, commissions on sale. So he's saying it's literally the only way to make money when you start out touring. On Twitter, he said, while we were having the discussion, can venues still simply stop taxing merch of artists? The more we make it tenable for young art and small artists to make a living on the road, the more great music we will get. Touring is one of the most honest ways to make a living, some of the hardest and most heartfelt work you can do. So why must venues fuck artists so hard? He then offered what he considered simple solutions. Stop taxing merch, stop lying to artists about costs of putting on shows, and include artists in more areas of revenue. Antonoff added, the stories I could tell from my years touring are bananas. Young artists on tour are the last to see any money. And then he finished, if these are my last tweets, I'm cool with that. Like some sort of music industry mafioso, we're going to come and like take him out.
But then he like, followed that with, okay, one more, Kanye, a little bitty little bitch. So I was kind of hoping that would be his last tweet. But yeah, I mean, look, he's obviously right to call that out, but he's also majorly involved with a lot of the artists.
It's you. You're the problem.
It's you. You're the problem. It's you. But he is. He's involved with so many of these artists. And like, I know that, like, I'm friends with somebody who works for a major label, and she was explaining that the that Taylor Swift's records, you know, being sold in record stores are probably the reason why a lot of record stores are going to be able to stay open over Christmas. You know, that's not, she's not doing that out of the goodness of her heart is the thing, though. Do you know what I mean? She's putting out four albums of the same content with different pictures on them to make a load of money. And it drives the cost up for smaller bands or artists who want to God forbid, press their music in like a physical format. So like, I don't know, Jack Antonoff. Well done, but also, you know, like you said, you're the problem, it's you.
I mean, also, but like, we need more vinyl pressing bands, and there is now Dublin Vinyl here in Ireland who are printing directly, which is great. But like, obviously, this, you know, it's because of the desire for vinyl, there's still not enough. And when somebody like Taylor Swift swoops in and gets front of the line in order to press, everyone else has to wait, you know what I mean? That's a lot of what happens. So we're going to talk to Rolly Pemberton now. And as I said, Rolly Pemberton is Canadian rapper Cadence Weapon. And he was started this My Merch, this US campaign to keep venues 100% away from merchandise. So they asking venues to pledge, like in the UK, to now not take commissions and to publicly share their associates. This is a... probably should share that they're not doing that. This is in association with the Featured Artists Coalition and the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers. The other thing that Rolly talks about later on is he's one of the Atkinson artists. So he's the first one, basically. So it's about decent working conditions for artists and others. So he's a part of that campaign as well. So I like what Rolly's been doing. I met him maybe 10 years ago in Dublin. He rapped on a track with Super Extra Bonus Party. They met at a gig in Tripod, RIP, years ago. And
Tripod?
So, been keeping an eye on him
since. You mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Pret a Manger? Isn't that where the Pret a Manger is going?
It is now.
So fucking depressing.
Yeah, so that's how I know him. And last year he released Parallel World, the... Polaris Prize Music Prize winning album for Canadian Album of the Year. He has been a poet laureate for his hometown of Edmonton. He now lives in Hamilton near Toronto. Because we didn't talk about it here, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the tour that prompted me to get in touch with him. One of the things that he talked about recently was going on tour last year. He did a 12-date US tour. He says a 3-week journey can cost anywhere between $60,000 and $100,000. And most of us hope to simply break even and gain a few new fans along the way. So a 12-day US tour, I think it was maybe a support role or a small tour in which he did everything. He decided not to bring crew or a DJ or anyone like our producer or anyone else with him. He did everything. He sold the merch. He did it solo without crew. Tour managed all the dates, did press, paid for transport. Drove himself, food and travel, social media marketing and PCR tests at the time because he needed one to get in and out of Canada. He said the expenses for a total were over $21,000. And after the booking agent 10% and a $7,000 tour support that he got from Canadian government, he still made a loss of over $2,000. It's just an example. And he says, you know, he doesn't regret doing the tour, but he's just saying that's the reality of it. Now, if people think that, you know, doing 12 dates, you're going to make huge loads of money. You're not, because it's gotten worse because of the inflation, cost of living over here. We have issues with Brexit, especially with Irish bands trying to go over with equipment. No one really knows. There's a carnet system that we don't quite, no one really kind of understands, and everyone has conflicting opinions of. Bands like Gillibands were really talking about this, where essentially you have to put a percentage of the value of the equipment that you're bringing into this carnet system. So it's like putting a deposit down on your tour, and as they said, you actually won't get that money back because you never really stop touring. So therefore you just tied this money up into this.
That's not how deposits work.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you you get it back when you stop touring, but when do you stop touring? When you're a touring band. Never.
Yeah, that's true.
So you might get it back temporarily, but you still have to give it again if you try and go again. Do you know what I mean?
God, so, it's such a
very
mess.
Ridiculous. So that's just kind of highlights all the things that are happening. And so we're going to talk to Rolly now, Cadence Weapon, about all of the issues and merch stuff and touring and what it's like for an artist in Canada at the moment. I would love to talk to an Irish artist about this soon. And
get in touch if you're mad about this and you want to talk to us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the real world numbers is something I really want to hear from somebody who's doing this kind of stuff and really just sharing. You know, I think we need more of that. We need more so people understand exactly what it is that the small to medium bands who are trying to either make it or who are already in a band like Gillibands, who are you know, doing well and or invisibly doing well, and how difficult it actually is, because it is not easy. So let's chat to Rolly Kane's Weapon now.
Got cash on me, credit card, got scans on me, got bands on me, tax man got plans on me, started tracking me, face ID on me, white programmer so they don't see it's me. Got fans on me, IG story, know where I be. All geotag, got brands on me, got ads on me, not asking me, but they're still on me. Got scams on me, look at me, I never get lonely. Know where I'm at, don't even phone me. When I'm home, I know they see, do it all voluntarily. Huh? On me, everything on me.
A lot of these things are off key. Chilling in my yard, they get where they watch me. I step out, the CCTV clocks me. On the oboe, that man shots keys.
Rolly, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to see you. Last time I saw you, when was, I don't know. Was it a long time ago? 10 years ago, maybe?
It would have been probably like 10 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay, good. Well, you're still at it. You're still at it. And you've been doing really well the last number of years, which has been lovely to see. Obviously, you won the Polaris Music Prize last year, and you have a book out at the moment, a memoir called Bedroom Rapper. And you've been doing loads of interesting things, Poet Laureate, a few other bits and pieces. And one of the things you did recently is bring up this merch commission issue. And I want to ask you, when did you seriously start thinking about this? This is something that you've done in conjunction with the Featured Artists Coalition and the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers. Based off, did it come from the UK?
Yeah. I was originally inspired by FAC, what they were doing. I mean, it's definitely something that's been on my mind for a while, but the idea of putting together a campaign was definitely inspired.
Yeah, you
by
had
them.
you had an article in Toronto Life about your your own situation in terms of touring in Canada last year. And at the end of the article, you do mention like one of the things that could be, you know, a thing that we could look at is reducing those merch commissions that happened. So you can just talk to me and tell like the listeners, right? So basically, I guess a lot of people don't really understand. So can we go through the little different configurations of what that means? Because some of the big, large venues, right, have like the big arenas have their own merch stands and staff and all that stuff. So for someone like yourself, most people that we talk about here are small to medium kind of artists. What are their options when they're going on tour, and what they have their options in terms of merch?
Well, okay, I'll give you the situation here. Typically, for somebody like me, you know, I'm, you know, in control of manufacturing my merch, getting it designed and shipping it from place to place. And typically that'll involve me physically bringing the merch, you know, whether it's a flight or driving to the place, right? And then when I get to the venue, I will typically sell my own merch, you know, or, you know, occasionally if the venue has somebody that sells merch, I'll pay them to sell the merch. But one of the things that happens at a lot of venues is they'll say, whether it's in the contract or sometimes they'll just surprise you the day of the show and be like, you know, we need 15 to 35% of your merch sales. You know, that includes records, CDs, and shirts.
So it's not like you are paying somebody $150 or $100, whatever, to man the merch stand. It's like they are taking a cut regardless, but you are still selling that merch on that in that situation. So I think that's probably what maybe people don't realize, because some of the larger venues, you know, will have staff and maybe they take a commission on something, or if you want them to, you can opt in. But I think where the problem is that it's mandatory a lot of the time, when if you want to sell merch, you have to pay them 25%.
Yeah. And the other thing is those bigger venues won't let you, you know, most acts, they have their own merch people. They have their own, you know, front of house staff, that kind of thing. But they won't let you use your own people. They'll be like, you're going to use our people, and you're also going to take a cut.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the context of what's been happening in the last couple of years, especially, and how difficult it's been, like it's part of a wider issue for touring acts at the moment, which is, you know, issues like inflation, cost of living, Brexit over here certainly is a big issue, digital revenues, mental health. There's a lot of things that are COVID, obviously, you know, you talked about that in your article about how, you know, the impact and the costs of that kind of thing. And I guess, like, how do you feel about it now? You're talking about like that merch idea. Where did that come from, first of all, as something that you actually focused on in order to establish something and try and make a change?
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, when I wrote the piece for Toronto Life, I was just trying to illustrate, you know, what it's like for artists today in like this era of COVID. You know, when the pandemic first started, you know, we didn't have an opportunity to play any shows for, you know, a year and a half. Then when we get back into it, everything has changed. It's become this situation where it's, you know, the expenses for things like gas or, you know, the rental van, the tour bus, you know, for hiring other musicians, hiring a tour manager, having a lighting person, you know, flights, hotels, all that stuff. The prices for that have all skyrocketed since the pandemic. And then on top of that, you know, you have inflation. It's just the expenses keep going up, but our fees are all the same.
Yeah.
As they were before.
Yeah. And then in some cases, they're even less.
So that was one of my, you know, one of the things I was thinking, you know, with this merch cut thing, because I noticed this summer, I played a bunch of festivals in Canada. It was the first time coming back. And I noticed that pretty much every festival, you know, they're taking 25% of my merch. But, you know, the funny thing is they, you know, they have volunteers selling it.
Yeah.
You know, those people aren't getting any of the money. And then also these festivals are getting grants that help them run. So why are they taking the money out of me, the artist? Why is it coming from me?
Yeah. And it's something that we've seen a lot in the last 6 months, especially since start of the year, late last year, bands like Dry Cleaning and even Jack Antonoff has been talking about it. Yard Act, most recently, The Big Moon as well. A lot of these acts, what they're doing is they're setting up outside of the venue or in a pop-up shop or in a bar nearby, just in order to circumvent those things. But it also highlights the issue that's happening. So obviously the UK one has been quite successful. There's been 400 venues or so. So what has your reaction been so far? I know it's only been a few days or whatever since you announced this.
It's been pretty good, actually. I'm pretty impressed already. You know, we've got dozens of venues so far. You know, almost 60 venues have signed up, and it's been 72 hours or something. You know, including some like really notable venues like Elsewhere in New York, Thalia Hall in Chicago, Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco. You know, it's you know, I feel like this is just a really good resource for bands and also fans to know the venues that are working with the artist's best interest in mind.
So in some of the larger venues and arenas where this is happening, most people are probably just adding that 25% in as an extra cost that passes on to the fan, right? That's what I'd imagine is happening. Where, like, obviously, independent artists don't really want to be doing that. They want to be charging like exorbitant price. I know I was at Kendrick Lamar last week and he charged me 40 quid for a bucket hat. You know what I mean? So like, you're like, no one wants to be doing charging those prices. So it's either that, add an extra to the cost to encourage that, or just make people aware of that. So that seems to be the thing, right?
That's my thing is like, I hate doing that. I hate having the, you know, pass on the cost to the fan. You know, like I would rather lose money than do that usually.
Yeah.
But that's the situation we're put in. And the thing is, fans don't know that. Fans don't know, you know, that we have to give 25% to the venue, so we have to raise prices. They don't know that.
Yeah.
They wonder why shirts cost so much. They wonder why the ticket price is so high. What are these fees and stuff? Well, the fees have nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
Right.
So you reckon that, you know, what's been going on at the moment and all of these combination of factors could reduce the number of small to mid-sized, like as you call it, get in the van music tours. Is that how you feel now?
Definitely. That's how I feel. I mean, it just feels more and more untenable to, you know, psych yourself up to go play all these, you know, a bunch of small towns driving around because it's so unpredictable now. It used to be like, okay, you know, you get X amount of presale. People aren't buying presale tickets anymore. And if they are, half the time they're not showing up for the show. So you could have like a sold out show and like, you know, 30% of the people don't show up, you know, for whatever reason.
And that presale issue obviously has a knock on effect in terms of, okay, there's people who are looking at those ticket sales and going, well, this isn't selling. We should cancel it, which I see a lot of over here, especially with North American touring acts, especially. I've seen a lot of cancelled gigs, quietly cancelled. Mm-hmm. And maybe for that reason as well, you know, they only sell on the week or the days leading up to it. And we're talking, I guess, you know, acts that have been able to do this before. You mentioned Animal Collective previously. They cancelled their Irish gig because they couldn't, and their European tour because they couldn't afford to do it at the moment. And I think, like, you've talked a lot about, you know, the other impacts of that. So, like, the mental as well, and as well as financial. Like, so how do you feel about it at the moment? Like, I mean, like, are you looking to go back on tour again, or, like, are you just not going to do it for a while?
I mean, it only makes sense if you have a new record out now, you know. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to go just play some random shows for no reason anymore. It's got to be, you know, really thoughtful reason for going. Yeah. But, you know, I think it's going to be something you're going to see a lot in the future, is more festival focus. You know, I mean, this year I played, you know, a handful of festivals that, you know, combined, you know, it paid me more than like a few years of doing full tours.
Mm, yeah.
You know, so the rationale behind, okay, I need to go play in like Idaho on the way to like Phoenix or whatever, it's just, it doesn't feel worth it as much anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I guess, you know, festivals just become the main buzz anyway, summer-wise anyway, for sure. But generally speaking, it kind of dominates the conversation, and it brings, well, it might bring people to you. Sometimes I don't even understand how festivals could even make a profit or break even over a number of years, you know, and
yeah,
probably there's loads of them that aren't as well. And I know that's the thing, but like, you know, yeah, it is that one. Like, it's sometimes it's great because, you know, you're introducing yourself to a new audience as well, but also you want to be playing to people who actually want to see you as well. So,
yeah, know. It's a different experience. That's the other thing, is, yeah, it's like, you know, you're attracting a broader audience who, you know, they're there more for the experience of a festival.
Yeah.
You know, it's a more of an experiential thing. Whereas, you know, if you're going to specifically for my show,
yeah,
you're going to be a lot more engaged, and it's going to be a more intimate, thoughtful engagement with my music.
Yeah. And when you shared those numbers as well last year or earlier about your tour, so you did a 12-day US tour, right? So that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen much people like sharing. I think maybe because you were kind of doing everything yourself, you're fully aware of it. I've definitely seen bands, you know, there's bands here called New Pagans who were giving out about, first of all, the merch stuff, but also the cost of touring in the UK when they're doing support acts, support bands, roles. And you did a tour, a 12-day tour, where you paid for everything. You did everything yourself. You sold your merch. You did it solo without a crew. You tour managed all the dates. You did press. You paid for transport, food and travel, social media marketing, whatever it was. Expenses of this were $21,000. And then after a booking agent, and you had tour support as well, presumably from the government.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
I did. I had a grant.
Yeah. So you made a loss still after all that. And that's just like, it must be very disheartening to realize that.
Yeah, it is. But in the moment, I wasn't really that bummed about it, because I felt like I had made a pretty good impact even on that tour. Like, you know, I'd made some new fans for sure, you know, and America is always going to be kind of hard to play in. And so that was like a post-pandemic tour, you know, just,
yeah,
you know, it felt productive, even though I did lose money on it. But I think the reason why you don't see as many people talking about that kind of thing is it's become kind of taboo to talk about your finances in the music industry. People are, you know, they don't want it. They find it embarrassing to admit, oh, I lost, you know, $2,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the long run, it's important for people to understand what's happening behind the scenes for these tours. You know, it's not, a lot of people see touring as like, yeah, it's just like sex, drugs and rock and roll. You're all having a lot of fun. You know, you're happy to be doing it because you get to just play music all the time. And it's like this, yeah, easy, great experience. But actually it's super expensive. Logistically, it's hell. And emotionally, it's really intense. You know, the poor diet and just everything you're going through on the road, like, you know, play a show in Chicago and you're driving to Cleveland the next day.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, hours and hours of driving and, you know, sleeping in bad conditions, you know, the whole thing is, it's gnarly.
Yeah, I mean, that romanticism, I think, is gone for most people. And I think a lot of people more are really understanding that now, like understanding that it's not the easy, cool rock and roll experience that people maybe have been, that has been glamorized over the years, that it's much more, this is a job. These are your working conditions. You know, these are, you can do a tour where you drive for 15 hours and then you still have to get up on stage. I mean, I don't know. That seems difficult.
It's deadly, man. Yeah, it's deadly. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously that tour last year came after the Polaris win, and it must have been, I mean, it must be nice to get out at least on the stages, like to play those shows themselves. Like, how have you found live shows and the live, what are your conversations like with people and your peers and fellow artists at the moment?
Everyone is a little stressed out, scared, frightened of the future. There's just a lot. It's a very unstable, unpredictable time to be a musician. You know, it used to be you could rely on certain income, you know, that people are going to be able to buy records and stuff. Now with inflation, just everyone has less money, especially less disposable income. So less people buying tickets, less people buying your record. It's just a really weird time. And there's a lot of anxiety. That would be the feeling I would say for most people. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I've been talking about this stuff publicly, you know, I personally am doing fine. Like, you know, obviously I wrote a book, like I've got other things going on, you know, where I don't hugely rely on shows. But for me, it's just something where I'm trying to support like younger artists and people who have, you know, maybe not even had the opportunity to ever go on a regular tour before, because, you know, they came of age during the pandemic.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, yeah. And you as well. I mean, you've been doing this for a long enough, and so you have that experience. And one of those experiences was also, I mean, despite having a very negative deal that you've talked about in the past, the 360 deal. And can you talk a little bit about that with me, just in terms of like, if you were, I mean, obviously you've given people advice before, but just if you were to tell people what exactly to avoid out of your own experience from that, the 360 deal obviously takes a lot of your revenue from others, from all aspects of what you do. And, but the thing I think maybe people don't realize is that how damaging that can be, because you talked about how you basically didn't earn anything from that.
Yeah. You know, I was just in a really bad situation with an indie label that was really predatory, where they managed me and they also put out my records and they also were my publisher. And as a result, you know, they controlled the means of production for everything and they controlled all the money that would come in. So I'd get money for a show and I would never know what happened with it. And it would be suggested that it was going to pay off like the debt for making my album, which typically these albums I made myself in my bedroom. The only thing to pay for is mixing, mastering. So it's not going to be that expensive. But yeah, it was just a really bad situation. And the number one thing I would tell people is, you know, build up as much as you can on your own and just maintain control as much as you can. Like maintain control of your masters, you know, maintain control of, you know, every aspect of your artistry that you can, because that's something that, you know, when you lose it, you spend a long part of your career trying to get it back.
Yeah. I've heard, you know, many stories of people who got stuck in bad deals and then, you know, it nearly, like you mentioned, it nearly, like you stopped for a number of years. You know, it does affect people in that way where you're just like, well, I don't want to be involved in this business aspect of music, and then it affects your actual creativity as well. So you end up then really not doing much because of a bad situation.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, you know, I was making a lot of music. It just wasn't coming out.
Yeah.
You know, because I just didn't have the infrastructure anymore. So it just took a long time to get all that infrastructure built up. Like, you know, the label I was on, who also managed me, they just ghosted me. So it was just a thing where, oh yeah, my whole infrastructure is gone. I don't have a booking agent. I don't have PR. I don't have a label. So I just kind of had to start from scratch and do it all myself. And that just took a few years to really build up.
Yeah.
But once I got that back going, I realized, you know, it was a bad situation, but I'm really actually glad I went through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like it really showed what I was capable of as an artist, you know, and I'm capable of way more than I thought I was.
Yeah, that's a good thing to know about yourself. You're the Atkinson artist. Can you tell people what that is and maybe share a little bit about your role and what the organization does?
Yeah, for sure. So the Atkinson Foundation, they are a nonprofit in Canada that focuses on, you know, the decent work movement and workers' rights. And the Atkinson Artist Program is basically a fellowship where I'm the first person to do it. And they're basically supporting, you know, some of my artistic endeavors, but also some initiatives that I have in mind. And I think the first thing really is this My Merch campaign that I've started. You know, it's something that I talked to them about before I you know, ran with it. And I think it's in line with a lot of their principles. You know, just, is, you know, I'm just thinking of different ways to do music industry reform. You know, that's my thing. I'm just thinking big picture and how can I, you know, change things in North America and the world and Canada. And, you know, it's a very open-ended relationship, but it's definitely founded in specifically the principle of decent work.
So, I mean, something that you've talked about a bit is community as well, like the kind of the power of community. And one thing that struck me was the talking about like local libraries and things like that as well, and how they can be places for not only knowledge exchange, but like places in which we can, you know, utilize as event spaces as well. For here in Ireland, like we're now looking at changing licensing laws for the first time since 1935 or something. So serious like reform coming next year, which means longer opening hours, but also things like our laws are very much tied to alcohol licensing. So event and dance licensing is very much tied to that. So we're finally looking at modernizing and extracting our event spaces and our event licensing from alcohol licensing. Do you see similar challenges where you are in terms of, like, we've obviously lost a lot of venues? And tell you specifically what we've lost in the last number of years is venues for electronic music, and that's been very tough. And we've done a lot of work here in the last 4 or 5 years and even longer to kind of show the government how important it is to give spaces for those communities. So the idea now that the nighttime economy, because that's what we call it now, because that's an exchange of a transaction they can understand. That is something they can understand, that the nightlife has financial value, creative value, and community value, you know. Do you see anything like that happening around you in terms of positives? I like to finish on positives and talk about reasons to be cheerful, you know.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I feel like, actually, interestingly, here in Canada, we really look up to you guys in Ireland and in England and stuff. Like, you guys have a much stronger music culture that's just inherently a part of your culture. Whereas in Canada, it's a bit of an afterthought, and it feels like we're always playing catch up, even though, you know, we have like really good grant system. And
yeah, that's the number one thing that we all know about Canada is like the grant system is good, you know.
But it has problems, though, because it kind of, it ends up going to a lot of mediocrity, and it enforces mediocrity. I'm sure, you know, it's like how when you have government sponsored media, you know, like BBC or like CBC, usually it is middle of the road stuff that gets promoted.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that is really a cool idea, like the whole library thing, like just really using space in a different way. I think now in places like Toronto, like where in Hamilton, where I live, you know, we need that more than ever. We lost a lot of mid-sized venues, a lot of DIY venues over the pandemic. And I'm really looking forward to just creative ideas and, you know, thinking outside of the box. And also personally, I'm interested in places that are not focused on alcohol sales.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think what happens is the landlords of some of these venues, they want to see a place that is bringing in money so they're able to raise the rent eventually. Yeah. And if a place is, you know, not selling alcohol and the focus is just on community and just creativity, it's not as desirable to some of these landlords and stuff. So that's my my thoughts for the future is more DIY spaces, maybe that are just divorced from that side of the industry.
Yeah, nice. And how's the music making going for you at the moment? Are you working on things?
I am, yeah. I'm actually pretty far into another album right
Great.
Now. Like earlier this year, I was in LA for a couple months recording. And yeah, I would say I'm nearly done another album. It's going to come out next year for sure.
Great.
I'm excited about it. It's about social media.
Okay.
And technology. It's all about
some of which you touched on Parallel World as well. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like where it ends off is really where the next album goes.
Okay. Nice. Nice. Cool. Rolly. Well, thanks for talking to me and really appreciate it. And always good to chat. Nice one.
Yeah. Thanks for having
Cheers.
Me.
Nice one.
Better not try and hate. Better not violate. I shine in the dark. Cut your lights off. Ice storm like 98. I am the catalyst. Peak game like analyst. Don't send a sub at me. I might go take your battleship. Life during wartime. They just want more lights. No time for games, so I don't play Fortnite. No 2K, but a cookie ass in real life. Shoot from the elbow. Mid-range. Feel like I won't miss. Heat check. Might just shoot from the hip. When you see me, don't trip. 1,000 like Kilo. Master my sound, Pino Palladino. Shut your block down right now like Nino. Say what I feel, keep it real like Lido. Montreal rave, got me feeling like Gino. Fam get paid, got me feeling like Tito. Jackson. Hit the target like Rico. Cut the shit off, Vito.
Okay, thanks to Rolly Pemberton, aka Cadence Weapon. As I said, that guy has been very busy the last couple of years. He is a rapper and an author. He won the 2021 Polaris Prize for his fifth album, Parallel World, a great album we talked about here as well previously. And he has a memoir out, a book called Bedroom Rapper, which you can currently only get in the US and Canada, and hopefully looking to get my hands on that soon. And yeah, just a really interesting guy, an advocate for his fellow creatives and workers, and a good guy to have around, I think. So fair play to Rolly. I think one of the things that I'd love to see come out of this is an Irish equivalent list of venues which don't take. And it really is just, like Rolly said as well, so bands know. Bands are aware, have the information in advance that they are booking a tour. They're like, well, I don't want to play that venue because they're going to take 25% of my merch, or because they're not on the list. And here's a list of venues that don't take. And I think, you know, just looking at the ones that have even that I'm aware of, I don't really want to get into listing out venues that do and don't do it, because I'm going to inevitably miss some. And but I think I'd love to see more of that. A big list, so maybe that's something we should look at, and might have a look, ask around.
And if there's anybody who is with a venue who wants to chat to us about this, whether you do it or you don't do it or whatever, we'd be happy to chat.
Yeah, I did ask a few people, and I guess, you know, the difficulty is no one really wants to, you know, speak ill of the people that they work with in any way. And it's not about speaking ill; it's just about finding a different way of talking about this issue and highlighting this issue. And now hopefully listeners of this podcast can tell their pals that that's what happens, and people be more aware of that. And that's really the point. We just want people to be armed with the information.
Maybe the next time you're buying merch, ask the person who's selling you merch what they know about it.
Yeah, that's a good idea, you know, and you'll know, you could probably know from the venue itself and the prices and all that kind of stuff, whether if the artist is selling it directly, there's probably a good chance that they're, you know, that they aren't, the venue isn't taking a commission. But I think when an artist is selling their merch directly, it's always a good sign, I think. But you can always ask, and I think it's worth asking. It's something I'm sure artists don't mind being asked about, because no one ever asks them about it. And also, it's just,
you always have the option as well, if you want to support artists directly and you're unsure if you want to do it at a gig, you always have the option to wait for Bankab Fridays, which happen once a month, I believe. They're very, very often. And you can buy merch directly from the artists on Bandcamp. That's, you know, LPs, t-shirts, tote bags, and look, mugs.
We're coming towards the end of the year now. It's a perfect time to be picking up some merch. And actually, the merchy Christmas will be back in the Grand Social in December as well. I believe, and let's say it's definitely coming back. I'm not sure it's the exact same venue, but I hear it's coming back, and that's going to happen. That's the best way to give money to so you're all making your lists, and Spotify is going to give you your Wrapped and all that kind of stuff. So have a think about, maybe, you know, if you haven't selling buying some of those records, if you haven't yet. I'm sure people who listen to this podcast are well on that as well, but I'm trying to be a bit more conscious about it as well, spreading that around a bit more, and where possible, and so like that's the best way to do it. Definitely give money to the artists directly where possible. So
yeah,
we all know that's a good thing. So we our next few, well, basically towards the end of the year, Andrea, do you know what's happening next week?
it's
the best of 2022 time. Next week.
Okay, so what's next week's one then? What do we do first? We do songs, then albums, then awards, isn't it?
Oh, it's going to be tough.
I think that's what it is. So maybe next week is songs.
I am nowhere near ready for that.
Nowhere near. Harry asked me last night, because we were talking about Spotify Wrapped coming up.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, do you know what your songs of the year is? And I was like, I couldn't even name a song that came out this year at this point.
That was actually what I've been doing this week, is just looking at the albums that came out this week. I've now
like made... the CMAT album came out this year.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Not 5 years ago. Well, so, I tell you, you know, there's
what's like going to be thief. Upsetting for me is that I'm currently making a list of Irish albums that I've listened to and enjoyed. And I had to stop at one point. Well, I had to... not stop, but I do 25 or 30 a year in the final list. I have a list of 100 albums that I heard this year. And a lot of them I really like. I think should be somewhere.
Are worth noting, yes.
Notable albums. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be able to fit all those in here. So I don't know what I'm going to do. So that's my dilemma at the moment, how I'm going to best represent my taste. But also
next weekend is Other Voices in Dingle. Are you DJing?
I am, next Friday night in McCarthy's. Ooh, I believe.
McCarthy's, is that the place where you were last year?
No, this is last year was different because it was only two or three venues, so we're back to normal now this year. So
this is my first normal Other Voices.
So
last year was my first.
There's like
16 voices,
different
so
venues
I'm...
all happening at once now again, and it'll be great. Gosh, so Friday the 2nd December, I'll be playing late Friday night in McCarthy's. Hasn't been announced yet, so don't tell anyone, but it is a great place. That's kind
there.
Of like
I'll
this indoor outdoor yard thing. It's fucking tiny and it's brilliant, and it's one of the best. It's where myself and Keane O'Quivon play at that time, and there's a good video of me playing ABBA and some one of the lads from was it Thumper? I can't remember what band he's in. Suddenly rising like a phoenix from the flames with his top off to as soon as Lay On Your Love On Me comes on. So
fabulous.
It's a special place, Dingle, so I'm looking forward to getting back there. And we're gonna have a good time.
Absolutely can't wait. Yeah. And my pal who I'm staying with has a dog now. So
bringing the dog to Dingle.
He lives down there.
Oh, right.
Shout out to Richard. Hello, Richard. He lives down there, and there may be a dog there. So I reckon it'll be a miracle if I get to any of the gigs and not just hang out with the dog for the weekend. So, I can't wait.
Okay.
Really excited.
Well, look, if you like what we do, it's patreon.com/909. Should always say that way earlier than I do, but there you go. Okay, great. Thanks, Andrea. We'll talk next week for
Niall.
the big flexing of our 2022 Best of Muscles.
Oh God.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.